This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
If you like Ultimate Gambling, this is it on Radio EcoShock. Despite everything we know about the coming climate shift, in 2017, carbon emissions to the atmosphere continued to increase. And despite the IPCC and the Paris Accord, we build big loopholes into the system. In fact, we humans are experts at lying to ourselves about climate reality. Here's yet another example. Of course, wood burning is, you know, when you generate electricity with it, that's green energy, right? We just return carbon captured by the trees to the atmosphere. And we've all been told that, except maybe it isn't true, and that little myth alone could help tip us over the edge out of control, along with everything else. Here to explain is Dr. Mary S. Booth. She is an ecological scientist and director of the Partnership for Policy Integrity in New England from Pelham, Massachusetts. Mary Booth, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, you've just returned from Bonn. What were you doing there?
I was working with a group of international nonprofits on trying to get the negotiators who are working out the rules for the Paris Agreement to appreciate the importance of forests for climate mitigation. Basically, we need to be growing a lot more trees and, you know, stopping finding ways of destroying our forests, because forests are really important for tying up atmospheric carbon.
Well, one commercial reason for cutting down forests beyond lumber or paper making is to burn the wood to make electricity. We've been told that that's much safer for the climate than fossil fuels. Is that a myth?
It's absolutely a myth. Burning wood emits more CO2 at the stack per megawatt hour than burning even coal. And the idea that you can just regrow forests and somehow sequester all that same carbon that you emitted ignores the fact that this is a massive infusion of carbon into the atmosphere just when we need to be reducing emissions. And, of course, growing trees takes a long time, but burning them is very quick.
In your video that you released with your paper, and the video was very helpful, there was a report to the European Parliament stating that emissions from wood and fuel plants, quote, shall be taken to be zero for solid and gaseous biomass. Where does that assumption come from, Mary?
The European Union carbon trading program, which treats emissions as zero, appears to assume that the biomass that's burned in power plants is wastes and residues, things like branches of trees that are left over after saw timber harvesting, or maybe mill residues like a pile of sawdust that's created at a mill when they're making boards. In fact, that's not the case, but if it were the case, the assumption being that since these things would decompose and emit CO2 anyway, burning them for energy doesn't represent a net addition of carbon to the atmosphere. If it turns out, which is actually the case, that we're burning a lot more than those things, that we're actually cutting down forests for energy, then the carbon impact is actually much greater.
So when the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change or other climate modelers do a projection of the future and say, well, we'll stay below 2 degrees by 2100, do they take what you just said into account?
Most of the carbon models, like the climate models that look at pathways to staying below 2 degrees or 1.5 degrees centigrade temperature rise, actually treat burning wood and other biomass as having zero emissions. So this policy idea has been incorporated into most of these models as a physical reality, which, in fact, it's not. As I said before, burning wood emits a lot of carbon. So, you know, you're burning it faster than you're taking it back up. It's going to increase carbon concentrations. So it's really a problem that these models don't take that into account. And there's various reasons why they don't take it into account, but the bottom line is that because of the treatment of bioenergy as carbon neutral in these models, they have baked in assumptions that a lot of the future energy of the world is going to come from burning biomass. And if that actually comes to pass, we'll see a net increase in emissions instead of a decrease.
I can kind of back up something that you said, because I live in a Canadian town with a lumber mill, and right beside it is another big operation chipping wood into sawdust for making paper. And the paper industry always claims that the wood being chewed up is just waste from the sawmills, but we know better. Everyone who lives here can see acres and acres of whole trees laid out there, like a little ocean of trees, right there at the chipping company being turned into sawdust. Is the same thing happening in the U.S. wood pellet industry?
Absolutely. The U.S. wood pellet industry has been growing explosively to serve the growing demand, particularly in the United Kingdom, believe it or not, which is the biggest consumer of wood pellets in the world, but in the EU as well, and then also increasingly in Asia, Korea and Japan, for instance. The projections are that the wood pellet exports will grow dramatically. So both from the southeastern United States, which is a big wood basket in the world, and also from Canada, trees are being cut down, turned into wood pellets, dried, because it's a much higher quality fuel when you dry the moisture out of it, and then shipped across the ocean to be burned in power plants, where it is officially treated as having zero emissions.
Do we know how much difference it makes if we burn whole trees instead of real waste from other processes?
It approximately doubles the net carbon impact, but it a lot depends. There's a lot of assumptions baked into that. But basically, the problem with cutting down and burning a tree or turning a whole tree into pellets and then burning those is that not only are you liquidating the carbon that's standing in the tree, but you're also foregoing that future carbon that the tree would have taken out of the air and turned into biomass. Trees are growing. As they grow, they convert atmospheric carbon dioxide into terrestrial carbon, that is wood. And so when you cut down a tree, you're foregoing that future sequestration.
If things go according to the projections, do you think that the pellet industry could become big enough to be itself an engine of deforestation?
Oh, I believe it already is an engine of deforestation in the southeast United States. The pellet industry likes to claim that they're only using low-grade wood that is not good for any other purpose, but sometimes it is the existence of a market for low-grade wood that makes it profitable to cut acres that wouldn't otherwise be cut. So we're seeing many, many huge clear cuts in the southeastern United States where the majority of the wood is being taken off to make pellets. And this is not only in pine plantations that were planted years ago for the pulp and paper industry, but also in native hardwood forests. Some of the most carbon-rich and biodiverse forests in the United States are being cut down to turn into pellets. Huge trees that are over 100 years old are being cut down and basically pulped up and pelletized.
Now, of course, that's going to have an impact on the species who lived there previously, the whole ecology, and possibly even the hydrology of the southeastern United States. There's a lot of impacts we're talking about.
Yeah, the impacts are really astounding. Of course, these beautiful hardwood forests are home to many birds and animals, and all of that habitat is obliterated. And then many of these forests are, you know, located in low-lying wetland areas along the banks of rivers. And when they're cut down, you know, forests transpire a lot of moisture into the air. And so that helps control soil moisture and flooding. And when those forests are gone, we see more flooding, more dramatic runoff episodes, erosion. The rivers are choked with silt, then it hurts the aquatic life as well. There's huge knock-on effects from clear-cutting these forests.
Has the biomass scheme already spread to the hot spots like Indonesia, Equatorial Africa, or the Amazon?
It's starting to. It depends. Burning wood pellets, it's a fairly expensive fuel, and so the places where we're seeing the wood pellet imports are places that have subsidy programs that pay for renewable energy, that give renewable energy credits to, say, a coal plant that is converting over to burning wood. So countries that don't have that tend to not see as much bioenergy being proposed. But it is starting to occur. I mean, for instance, a new colleague I met just recently from Ivory Coast was describing to me several biomass plants that are proposed there that are claiming they're going to be burning waste materials. But we know what happens when there's not enough waste materials from different agricultural efforts and that kind of thing. They turn to burning forest wood. Actually, I was surprised to learn that Ivory Coast had plans to build quite a few bioenergy plants. You know, this is seen as a way of becoming more independent from fossil fuels. But of course, it's a totally false solution, because if you're cutting down forests and burning them in the name of reducing carbon emissions, you're not going to accomplish anything. You're just going to make the problem worse.
And I'm afraid that some environmentalists and green groups are possibly supporting this, saying, well, it's better than coal or better than nuclear.
I think there's been a good amount of education and outreach that's been done in recent years. So more and more groups are realizing that this is a false solution and are collaborating with us and with others to try and oppose this. But you're right, there are still some green groups that are supporting this. And there's particularly a lot of confusion around, you know, what we've been talking about so far is burning wood to generate electricity. Some people are still advocating pretty strongly for using wood for thermal energy, like a wood pellet industry here in New England, to replace oil. You know, we're quite dependent on heating oil here. And so there's the idea that we can replace our dependence on heating oil with burning wood pellets in stoves in people's homes. And, of course, anything like that where it's scaled up, if you're increasing forest cutting to make those pellets, it's a false solution.
And another factor that you mentioned in your paper about making wood pellets appear to be carbon neutral is replanting and forest growth elsewhere. But I have to say again, here in British Columbia, we cut down vast forests every year, and replanting is not always successful. The climate is changing, and related to that, forests are burning down pretty fast. So some forests are converting to grasslands. We can see it. How do replanting failures relate to your study?
Well, absolutely, replanting failures are a problem. But, you know, beyond that, the biomass industry is still making this crazy argument that bioenergy should be treated as instantaneously carbon neutral, because even though we're cutting and burning trees over here, there are still trees somewhere over there that are still growing and taking carbon out of the air, as if those trees over there can somehow compensate for the additional emissions that they've just caused. This is a totally false argument. It's amazing that policymakers still fall for this. But, you know, even if you look at carbon accounting the right way, which is that we have to wait, you know, if we cut down a tree now, we have to wait for trees in that same spot to grow back to achieve true carbon neutrality, you know, that takes decades, if not more than a century. And meanwhile, you know, as you pointed out, there's very little certainty that it'll actually happen.
Well, plus, when you head out to the woods with a gas-powered chainsaw and then you use all kinds of skidders and heavy equipment to make the logging roads, you put them on trucks, you get them over to a plant. We don't know what that pellet plant works on. And after that, then, as you say, they dry it. Then they're going to ship it probably by truck or rail. It goes into boats. It goes over to Great Britain. It gets burned. And then the ash has to be. There's carbon all over the place in that chain.
Absolutely. The fossil fuel emissions that are embedded in pellets are quite high, 15 to 20 to 25% more carbon on top of the carbon inherent in the pellets itself is expended in as fossil fuels, as you pointed out, in, you know, harvesting the trees and then chipping and then pulverizing, pushing it through a dye to make the pellet, and then drying, and then, of course, transport across the ocean. They do burn a lot of wood at the plants to dry the pellets, and that is another big source of carbon emissions that's just not counted. It's not considered as an emission, but of course it is an emission. So it's quite carbon intensive. And even for in the U.S., where we don't have electricity plants that are burning pellets because in general our subsidies aren't high enough to support that, but we do have many plants in the U.S. that burn green wood chips. And I've seen estimates from industry analysts that it's about 2.2 gallons of diesel per per ton of wood chips to just harvest them and get them to the plant. So that's not a small amount. And just for comparison, like a 50-megawatt power plant burns about a ton of wood chips per minute, a little more than a ton per minute when it's operating properly.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I am Alex Smith with my guest, ecologist Mary Booth from the Partnership for Policy Integrity in Pelham, Massachusetts. We're talking about a dangerous myth of using wood as a mass energy source, and it isn't safe for the climate. Mary, I watched the introductory video you released with the new paper, and frankly, you lost me at the point of replacing an old model to calculate the impact of burning wood for power versus a new model called NEI. For the rest of us, could you take a stab at explaining why we need a new model and what the new model does?
Basically, we need to stop treating burning biomass as having zero emissions. For instance, for a carbon trading program where a power plant has to pay for each ton of carbon that they emit if they're burning fossil fuels, carbon trading programs tend to treat biomass emissions as zero, so power plants don't have to pay for those. We need a way to weight those emissions for how much money should a power plant pay to emit a ton of biomass carbon, given that if that biomass is truly sourced from wastes and residues and genuinely would have emitted carbon anyway from decomposition. You want to know what the net emission is from burning it now rather than letting it decompose. And that's the weighting that you would assign that would say how much they should pay for that ton of carbon. So basically, this just says that burning emits carbon quickly. Decomposing material in the field, if it were left in the field, which is the alternative fate, emits carbon slowly. The difference between those two numbers is the additional carbon that's been emitted by burning the biomass as fuel instead of leaving it to decompose. And it's that additional carbon, that net emission, that needs to be counted and paid for. And all the NEI does is just express as a percentage of stack emissions what the net emissions are that should be valued.
I think I got that. That's great. You also say, quote, climate models, renewable energy policies, and carbon trading programs in the U.S. and EU erroneously treat biomass sourced from residues as carbon neutral, end quote. How big is that error, and what does it say about the possibility of our goal to stay below 2 degrees C by the year 2100?
Well, it's hard to say how big the error is because we don't actually know how much of the residues and the biomass that's being burned is genuinely residues and how much of those residues are things that would have been burned anyway, in which case there's no net emissions versus something that would have decomposed. But basically, many of these models for renewable energy anticipate that there will be about 100 exajoules of bioenergy from wastes and residues. And if you burned 100 exajoules of biomass, it would represent about 9 billion tons of carbon per year. So that's 9 billion tons that would be emitted and not counted, just treated as zero by these models. And that's not insignificant, given that we're supposed to be getting to net zero emissions in the next couple of decades. So how much of that would need to be weighted and counted would really depend on what kinds of fuels were being burned. But the overall magnitude of the stack emissions of 9 billion tons is really quite important and large number that needs to be paid attention to.
Is a billion tons and a gigaton the same thing?
Yes.
Okay, so I did a little calculation trying to figure this out for myself, like how big is 9 gigatons of CO2 that would happen if the doubling of or more of bioenergy happens. And it works out that that's equal to 1/4 of the total emissions from fossil fuels in 2017. So that is really significant. That could change the climate.
Yeah. Well, it would mean, you know, importantly, that we'd be pouring all these resources energy and physical resources into building biomass power facilities that serve as carbon pumps that convert terrestrial carbon that's embedded in trees into atmospheric carbon, and making this huge, these huge infrastructure investments in the name of something that is a false solution, that's actually increasing emissions instead of decreasing them. We, at this point, we are almost out of time, and we need to be making really big investments into true zero emissions technologies. And of course, there's carbon embedded in the making of a wind turbine or a solar panel as well. And so there's nothing that has no carbon impact, but these kinds of technologies pay off their carbon debt a lot faster than bioenergy, which not only has the expensive, carbon-intensive infrastructure of the biomass power plant, but is burning a fuel that emits carbon continuously.
What needs to be done to close this serious loophole in international climate agreements and renewable energy funding?
There's several different things that need to happen to close the loophole. There's some rather arcane but important conventions of how carbon is counted by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and how countries report their biomass emissions. There's some changes that need to happen there. But most important is that we need an infusion of common sense from policymakers. It's just beggars the imagination that people think that we can burn forests and not have an impact on the climate. And, you know, the biomass industry has been extraordinarily effective in convincing policymakers that this is a solution for mitigating climate change. And I think your average fourth grader could tell you that burning forests to mitigate climate change is not a good idea. So this really needs common sense, and it needs people to stand up and say to policymakers that, you know, when we're promoting renewable energy, when we're giving subsidies for renewable energy, we don't want our public money spent on tree-burning power plants. We do want it spent on efficiency, megawatts, of course, first, and then new infrastructure that doesn't emit carbon.
So there you are in New England. Mary, what got you seriously investigating wood energy as a suspect source in this new energy future?
I came back to New England in 2007 after being away for a number of years, and first started working on a water withdrawal permit for a biomass power plant that was proposed here in Massachusetts. And they wanted to take over 800,000 gallons a day out of the wild and scenic Westfield River for cooling for this biomass, this 50-megawatt biomass power plant. And I worked with some other people to help oppose that permit and get it rewritten because it was seriously flawed. And in the course of that, I came to understand that the state of Massachusetts was promoting biomass power as zero emissions technology. And of course, that just, I'd never heard of anything so ridiculous. And so I started working on it here in Massachusetts and then nationally and now internationally. 10 years later, here I am still working on it, and I kind of find it hard to believe that we haven't successfully killed this idea yet, that we can burn forests and call it carbon neutral.
Mary, what are you working on now?
I am working on trying to find ways to close these loopholes in international policy that allow bioenergy to be treated as carbon neutral, both in the IPCC and the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the UNFCCC, where the negotiations about Paris Agreement implementation are happening.
Could you briefly tell us what is Partnership for Policy Integrity?
We're a small nonprofit. We work on mostly on two issues, which is obviously bioenergy, and then we also have a small oil and gas program that working on fracking impacts and toxicity of fracking chemicals. That's headed up by our senior attorney, Dusty Horwitt. And we're totally foundation-funded. People sometimes wonder if we get funding from the fossil fuel industry. We don't, and it would be funny if we did, because it's actually the fossil fuel industry that is promoting biomass burning in a lot of cases. So that's our story. We're very targeted on these two non-solutions to climate change.
Why would the fossil fuel industry promote biomass burning?
Because coal plants, if they can switch to burning wood, can be exempted from carbon trading programs. This is what happened in the UK. The massive Drax plant in Yorkshire, which was providing, it's a 3-gigawatt plant, and it was providing up to 7% of the UK's power. They've converted half the plant to burn wood. So they're importing millions of tons of pellets from mostly from the U.S. and some from Canada and then some from other places as well. And they have been exempted. Not only are they getting close to 2 million pounds a day in subsidies from the U.K. government, courtesy of U.K. ratepayers, but they are also exempted from purchasing allowances under the EU trading system for the CO2 that they emit when they burn biomass.
Boy, the circle is coming full turn, because I remember reading in history how when the Industrial Revolution started and in the early days of metalmaking in Europe and in Britain in particular, there was just this wide area of southern Britain that was deforested due to the need for wood, and now it's happening again, except they're drawing it from overseas and from much further away.
Yeah, we really haven't stopped being a colony for them. We're just providing energy now, yeah. Yeah, I mean, deforestation to provide heat and power is nothing new. And, you know, what people don't appreciate understand much is that fossil fuels are, I mean, I'm no fan of fossil fuels, but they are amazing in the sense that there's a tremendous amount of energy packed into a relatively small amount of matter. And attempting to replace fossil fuels with wood means massive, massive forest harvesting to replace even a relatively small amount of fossil fuels.
We've been talking about the myth of green energy from wood. Our guest is Dr. Mary S. Booth from the Partnership for Policy Integrity in Pelham, Massachusetts. Her paper, Not Carbon Neutral, Assessing the Net Emissions Impact of Residues Burned for Bioenergy, was published February 21, 2018, in the journal Environmental Research Letters. You can access the full text for free. I'll put a link in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Mary, thank you so much for helping us understand this.
Thank you for having me on.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.